Welcome back to Season 8 of Talking with Traders. This is the fourth year of this podcast since it began in 2020. Once again, IG Markets have come on board as the sponsor of this podcast. We're truly grateful and privileged to have such a global leader in CFD trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we invite back onto the podcast, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from players in different areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Once again, thank you to IG Markets for sponsoring this podcast into its fourth year. And thank you, listeners, for your continued support of this podcast. Now, let's get into this week's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Talking with Traders. And this week, the guest I have is from the US, from the East Coast in the US. His name is Anthony Crudelli. He is the host of Futures Radio Podcast. He's a former pit trader in the S&P 500 pit, got 25 years of experience in the markets. It's a great honor to be speaking to you, Anthony. Welcome to the podcast.
Gareth, thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks so much. So I gave the intro there as a former pit trader, but if you can, maybe just add a little bit of color to your background, if you've got 2 minutes to tell us, if you can condense it into such a short time, about the path that your career has taken to get you to this point now.
Wow. Well, got on the trading floor at a very early age, right out of high school, 18 years old. I went down to the trading floor all because of an accident. And it was literally an accident, a car accident. I told the story numerous times in my life and on podcasts. And it was one of those days where nice sunny day in Chicago, buddy picked me up from my house coming around the corner. My brother is driving my car coming towards us. And he was going to pull over on the oncoming side of the street so I could talk to my brother who was on the driver's side. Communications got mixed up and boom, we hit in a head-on collision. Broke my femur. And next thing you know, very serious injury, total change in anything that I was going to do in my life. I was actually looking to get into business travel. I was just a guy, neighborhood guy in the outskirts of Chicago, really didn't have much direction. And I never really had traveled outside of the city much. I mean, we had gone to Wisconsin or Michigan a few times in my life. I'd only been on a plane once. So I was really enthused by potentially going into travel. Didn't happen. Took a job through the classified ads on the trading floor for a runner. Figured it would strengthen my leg. It would go downtown. It'd be fun. I went down there, started to work in the meets at Lynn Waldock, and really the rest is history. Quickly got went to the Eurodollar options. Actually, I spent a year in there. And then at 20 years old, I applied for membership at CME Group. It took a period of time. Eventually, I got an IOM badge, which put me in the S&P 500, which I had clerked in there for the prior year as well as a trade checker. And at that time, the E-mini S&P was just getting started. E-mini S&P launched, I believe, at the end of 97. I went through membership in 1998. During that time, I was spending a lot of time with what they call the Globex guys. And they are the ones that were putting forth the electronic version of the S&P 500 called the E-mini S&P. And so I was spending a lot of time with them in the beta stages and really just going upstairs while I was waiting for my membership to trade in the pit, spending time trading it electronically. And so, you know, kind of the rest is history. I spent a little bit of time trading in the pit and quickly went to electronic trading just because the pits were so packed. I wasn't very successful in the pit. Because it was really more of a political game than anything. And I was such a young kid at the time. I didn't even have the ability to take on some of the big size that big pig traders were able to do. And so electronically was my path.
That's an amazing story. I mean, particularly the part about how you had an accident and that's how you ended up in the floor. That I was not expecting that. That's probably one of the most interesting backstories that I've got from a guest on this podcast. All right. So you've given us a nice background there. Thank you. Now, having been in the pit, trading S&P futures, are you naturally still an index trader by nature, or have you ventured away from that to trade stocks and other things as well? Or is it you predominantly still an index trader?
I trade stocks, but I don't trade stocks as really a day trader. I think that futures are a better product for day trading, so I tend to trade the indexes for day trading.
Okay.
You know, or even trading. You know, I do trade stocks, but I would consider myself almost more of an investor of stocks than a trader.
Right. Okay. So it's about the medium to longer term holding time on stocks, and then day trader using the S&P. Did you S&P predominantly, or do you look at other indices as well? NASDAQ, Dow Jones.
Yeah. Well, S&P, NASDAQ, and the Russell. This year it's been more Russell and NASDAQ than S&P.
Okay.
And so it's ebbs and flows.
Okay. All right. And options, I know you do a little bit of work on options as well. You know, when you trade that, are you just mainly a directional trader buying puts or buying calls, or do you do some more exotic stuff like the spreads and this calendar spreads and the butterflies and the straddles and all that other interesting stuff? Where are you in terms of options trading, and how do you apply your approach to options?
Options trading for me, I'm strictly a buyer of options. I'm not what I would consider somebody who is well-versed in options spreads and all that. I mean, yeah. I understand the basics of them. I understand, you know, I actually worked in the Eurodollar options and I always remember being in there and I'm like, man, I need to go to the S&P because these guys are way smarter than I am right now. So I know my place, but I am, because I'm directionally and technically a technical trader, I tend to be more directional with options as well. And I think that, you know, as time's gone by and as time goes by, I think it probably gets a little more sophisticated. But at this current moment, I'm definitely more of a buy the calls. I do some strangles and straddles every now and then based upon the current market environment, but mostly buying calls, buying puts.
Yeah, keep it simple. I mean, I can also say I trade a bit of options, and I've also tried all the funny, interesting, exotic stuff. Quite honestly, I think, like you say, just keep it simple. Trade directionally. If you're wrong, you're wrong. You know, don't try to get too clever.
Exactly. And I found them to be really good for me as a day and swing trader, because buying that option gives me that little bit of buffer of time to where, like, I trade a NASDAQ option or a Russell option or even an S&P option. You know, I don't need to be right immediately. I might ultimately be right in the direction in the futures and lose money. But in an option, at least it gives me that little bit of a buffer. And it allows me to, I think, have a stronger hand in some of my plays, especially as we get into a whippy two-way tape. You know, I tend to go and just buy the call or buy the put to be directional there to be able to withstand the volatility in the short term.
Right. Okay. All right. Superb. All right. So you've got 25 years of experience in the market, and clearly you've learned a great deal in that time. A lot of your tweets, well, I love watching what you put on Twitter. That was how I got in touch with you, obviously. But I really enjoy the stuff that you put out on Twitter. Very educational, and it shows a lot of experience and a lot of background knowledge. And I want to just bring in a couple of tweets that I found on your timeline, because I think they're interesting to flesh out and talk about for the audience to listen to. So the first one I want to bring up is something you tweeted some time back. Basically, it says, be smart and small, don't force anything. And I like this, because that's kind of like that's experience speaking there, because I think a lot of young buck, really, you know, enthusiastic traders will probably want to oversize their trades, and that doesn't usually end well, right? So let's just discuss that. So, you know, be smart and small, don't force anything. How did you come around to that sort of philosophy? Was it a hard taught philosophy, or, you know, through the school of hard knocks, like many of us have been through, or, talk to us about that.
Well, no lesson in this business is not a tough one, right?
Sure.
And so when I'm saying be small and smart and don't force trades, be forced in, it's really me communicating to myself that, you know, there's certain moments to size up and they're very clear. And those are times where you are actually mentally in a good place, physically in a good place, emotionally in a good place, and the market's giving you everything you want. Those are clear times to size up, and they just happen naturally, organically. Most traders try to force themselves into those moments, and they try to force themselves into trades because as traders, our minds are always set on, you know, outcomes, right? We are so focused as traders, no matter how hard we try, we are focused on results. And so when we focus on process, and we actually believe in our preparation, we believe in our homework, that allows us to dictate the position sizing, which I think is probably the most not talked about enough thing that a trader has to discuss with other traders or within themselves. And that really gets them over the hump of either losing or just breaking even or wherever they are, because that position sizing element is so key, because most traders will position size too big in a moment that doesn't require you to do that, or doesn't tell you to do that. And most of them are doing it because they're trying to force an outcome. Mm-hmm. And so they're not really being smart in that moment. And so in that moment, they really should be small. Like most traders, the reason why they have their worst days following their best days is because they've now gotten so focused on results. And the next day, not only have they not planned for what they do when they make money, but they think that they're only so focused on pushing through to a higher result, or that they now start to force it. And the day is not what the day was yesterday, and now they're trading bigger and they're not being smart. And so they're not recognizing that in the moment situation to be small and smart and to be forced into that situation. And so when I tweet things, especially things like that, that's me reinforcing to myself, like, look at the situation, Anthony. I mean, if it's choppy, you need to be small. You need to be smart. You know, you don't force anything. Let the market force you in. And when that happens, that's when you get in a good rhythm. That's when good things happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting what you said there, but you know, you know when to size up because everything, the stars align and you feel right and you know, well prepared, et cetera. Is that in your world, is that just a natural gut feel that you have, you know, you just know when you know, or is it more mechanical than that?
It's mechanical to start, and then it's intuition as time goes by.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where most traders are looking at every single trade, especially in the futures and even options market, where they're looking at every single trade in the same size, right? Is it always going to be a one lot or a two lot, right? Is it in and is it just out? And I think those are very binary decisions that ultimately, if you have a strategy that you like that is very binary in execution, then you should probably be doing more automation and taking the human element out of it altogether.
Okay.
But if there are certain setups that you have that are an A setup, a B setup, or a C setup, or if there's certain environments that is more conducive to your strategy, then you need to be adjusting risk and adjusting position sizing. And so I think that's such an important element of trading as a day trader, because you are not going to make money every day. It's not going to happen. You're not going to make money every week. You're not going to make money every month, and maybe not every year. I know I've not made money every year in my career. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I have to understand that when my moments are there mechanically, right, that's something I'm training myself to get used to. I'm getting better at executing when that's an A setup in an A environment, or an A setup in a B environment, or so on and so forth. Versus over time, it becomes intuition where you're like, okay, look at today, everything is set up. It's the environment you want. The market's respecting your strategy. Take advantage of it.
Right. Okay. All right. On the subject of your tweets, and there's another one here, which is a little bit what we have been talking about in any case, but I'm going to read it out nonetheless. You wrote some time back, many new traders either trade too small or too big. Then they switch to being too big or too small. Despite being a discretionary trader, I've learned to be more systematic with my position sizing. Now, I know we're probably kind of going over ground we've just covered here, but I like that where you said, you know, if you learn to be more systematic with your position sizing. And also, you know, in terms of that part where you said, you know, new traders are either too big or too small, and then they switch around, and when they think they've been too big and it's not working, they then go too small and they flick back and forth the other way. So what's the ideal position sizing then?
It starts off with market environment. First off, you have to know your strategy well enough to know what market environment is conducive to your strategy. Every technician out there looks like a genius in a bull market. We've all heard this, right? So somebody can put out there and put a rising wedge or a trend line or a VWAP or, you know, a Bollinger Band. It doesn't matter the indicator. In a bull market, if you're looking at a long setup, everybody makes money that's looking to try and buy, and you could really trip over a winner, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not that difficult. But when you get into an environment that's not conducive to whatever it is that your strategy is, let's just say that you're, you know, somebody who's mostly looking to be long, and you are somebody who's trading the indexes, and you're looking at a long strategy most of the time, and you're trying to buy the S&P, you're going to find that certain environments work extremely well. But what happens when you get into a sideways market, a two-way tape, divergences with the indexes, S&P's up, Russell's down, S&P's choppy, you know, or you get into a bear market? Is that same type of strategy going to excel in that environment? And so that's the disconnect that I think most traders have, and they don't understand that they're trying to just go through and just think that their strategy, their short-term strategy, is the end-all be-all, and just because they're so good at their short-term strategy that these other factors around them don't matter. Well, no, it doesn't work that way, right? I mean, my best trading year ever was 2008. It was a bear market. And I'm really a two-way tape trader, but that year the news and the technicals were so supportive of downward moves that really every short setup I got, I just hammered it, right? It wasn't like a genius. Yeah. It was just like, oh, S&P, Moody's are cutting ratings. Like, you know, I hit the bid in the S&P, you know, and I tripped over winners and they went my way a lot further with bigger size than they ever did. Now, we haven't had a global financial crisis like that since then.
Yeah.
So, you know, in other years, my strategy, I'll look at it and say, you know, in a bull market, if I get buy signals, I want to trade them bigger when all the indexes are going up. And in a bull market, you know, if it's a two-way tape in a bull market, you know, consolidating environment, I can't be aggressive on either side. I've got to take my risk down. I take my position size down. Yeah. So it's about you understanding environment. And I said this a few times, that's conducive to your strategy and style.
Yeah. So you've got to find a style. You've got to find a style of trading that fits your personality, right? There's many ways to skin a cat. There's many ways to trade. It's not one right way or one wrong way. There's many ways, and it depends on your strategy. So you're a day trader of the S&P or of the indices, as you say. Do you go home flat every night then in terms of your day trading book, or do you sometimes carry those sort of positions overnight as well?
Over the last several years, I've gone more into what I would consider a swing trader in the futures markets. You know, I'm not holding positions too long. A lot of times they're multiple days. Price is what's going to get me out. So, you know, if I buy a call or a put, or if I buy some S&P or sell some Russell, doesn't matter. Price is what will get me out. And typically I'm sizing things now to where I will try and hold them for the day, or if it goes into the night, I will have the ability to hold that position throughout the course of time that it takes for price to be achieved, right? And so that's more of the way I look at it now. I used to be a super short-term day trader, scalper. I am not that person anymore. I am somebody who's very picky about what days I'm day trading. I don't day trade every day anymore. Yeah. I will find price areas that I like, and I try to, if they work for the day, great. And if it takes a couple of days, I try to make sure that my position size is just enough to where I could withstand the move overnight.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that you sort of moved away from that really aggressive day trading in and out several times to a little bit more of a swing trading type of strategy. Do you think that's kind of an age thing where we're all, I mean, I'm guessing we're a sort of a similar sort of age. You just get to a point where you're a little older, you've got, or you're also a little bit more experienced, but it's stressful to be, you know, staring into that screen throughout the day, watching every tick up and down, trying to capture every little move. Do you think that's why you've moved away to more of a sort of a swing trading strategy, a little bit less stressful?
Stress is what started it. Well, here's the thing. Let's go back, right? 10 years ago, I had a heart attack at my trading screens.
Oh, wow.
At that point in time, it was not a cardiovascular disease. It was a stress-induced, for all intents and purposes, heart attack. Didn't have open heart, didn't have a stent, didn't have any of those types of things. And we can get into that a little bit if you want, but this leads to why I am not that person anymore. That's super short term. First off, markets have changed. You know, when I first started scalping the S&P 500s, it was in the hundreds in pricing, right? And so it was probably trading around 600, right? And then you look at it in a range, I could trade big size for ticks and very small movement, right? So I could buy 100 or 200 or more and know that most likely it's not going to rip against me, right? Yeah, immediately, right? There's a buffer of that time. So I'm able to size up and do that. As time has gone by, even up into, I'd say, the 2000, 3000 price action, the S&P, a 1% move now becomes a much greater move. So if you buy, that same contract size, initially your stop is a lot wider, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like all of a sudden I go from a guy who's trading 100 to 500 lots, at a tick, to where now if I buy 100 to 500, I don't have the ability fast enough to click out of that position, in a timely fashion. And so the machines run me out. And so I have to be smaller now, and I have to widen, what I'm looking at in terms of a scalp. I'd scalp for ticks to now points or handles, and that gets wider and wider as time goes by, which is intensifies the stress of it. And having a very good career at it, did fabulous at it for, 15 plus years. It was a time where all of a sudden I'm like, man, I miss massive adjustments. Like I used to be able to lift an offer or hit a bid and at least have a second to turn out of it. That is a lot harder to do when the market's moving at a much rapid pace. Yeah. So stress led into it. And also, as time's gone by, the faster markets are moving, I think that, it's interesting that most people will think that the markets are like super efficient with pricing. I think that the wider and the faster they go, the less efficient they get. I think that if you really step back and look at Russell and NASDAQ, which I like a lot more, I've been trading more lately, their slippage is the opportunity, right? And so the algos or the high frequency guys are going to run them, and you've got to find a way to make money with that. And when they run them too far, to me, that's price opportunity, right? Now I've got to be able to withstand that last leg of it, however far it goes. But to me, that those moves, if I'm fading a move or going with a move, I guess it depends on that, I feel allows me a better hand, a stronger hand in the market, versus me trying to compete with speed in an in-the-moment decision. And there's times for that where like I might flip out of stuff, but why try and compete at something that they're way better at than I am, right? And so I found that use what they're doing to my advantage. I know a lot of the market makers in the space.
Yeah.
They don't look at charts. They don't care. They go, oh, you're looking at order flow. You're looking at VWAP. They're just like, It's just that is irrelevant to them, right? They're making a bid and an offer. They're laying stuff off constantly. A lot of the stuff's flowing from the options markets now. And to them, they're not worried about us stepping in and out. So it's, for me, I was them years ago, right? And now the machines are doing it. And so why try to be a tick by tick trader or point by point trader when that is for me, it's less desirable. And I think it's just a less efficient way to be in this business.
Mm-hmm. A lot more noise, I guess.
Yeah.
I want to go back to what you said about having a heart attack at your desk, because that's quite hectic. So much of what I read about trading is how important it is to look after yourself physiologically. So that means, good health, good diet, be well hydrated, get enough sleep, etc., etc., so that you can come in and be your best self. Because we're in a way, we're sort of high performance athletes in a sense doing this game, but it's sort of a very much like a mental athletics. So, where were you at that point in your life that you had a heart attack? I mean, were you And I'm sorry if this is quite personal, but I think it's potentially a part of a story that maybe a lot of people would resonate with. Trading is known to be quite a stressful business. How were you at that stage, health wise, and just in general, sleep, hydration? You know, were you trying to be conscious of your health getting into the trading days, or do you think that you weren't, and that was what led to that?
I was always health conscious.
Right.
I never really had any issues with alcohol. Don't do drugs. Don't smoke. You know, worked out all the way from high school on. Very much involved in sports. It's the mental side that crushed me, right? I was such a competitor, and losing frustrates me so much that I internalized so many things. And the way that stress hurt my body was, you know, just compression, right? And I was working extremely hard, but I wasn't balancing that hard, intense mental side of trading with things to counter it. You know, breathing.
Yeah.
We don't think about that as much. You know, you and I talking here right now, we're not taking in, you know, a ton of breath, right? Like we're talking we're looking, you know, where it's intense, right? It doesn't may not feel like it, but after doing it for, you know, hours a day, sitting in one spot, it is, or even standing. I know that a lot of people stand now. I stand a lot as well. And so it just overwhelmed me. I had anxiety. And I was successful. I mean, it's not like I didn't have money. You know what I mean? It's the pressure we put on ourselves is so immense. And when you, I go back to even like the scalping and the short-term trading, I think that there is really still the potential for a lot of people to be very successful in what I did and in the current markets and for short-term scalping. I think you have to be very disciplined and structured to do it. But I think it's also a younger person's game to do that. And I also think that it's somebody who's very new and has that energy for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that you have to realize that that will take a toll on you.
Yeah.
I mean, financially, it might be very rewarding, but it will mentally and physically take a toll on you.
Yeah.
And so who do you want to be? How much can you handle? Who are you as a person to be able to withstand that? Right. And so because for me, I had no success, then a lot of success, then I tried to sustain success, then I had some heartbreaks again, you know, the pressure just over time, I admit it, it's got to me.
Yeah.
And it made me revamp my life. You know, it made me look at things in a different way that I was like, you know what, man, you have to realize that in order to do this, I was 36 years old. Like it's 10 years later, I'm 46 now. I still feel the same as I do at 36. I actually feel better.
Yeah.
But in order to do this for a long period of time, you got to take care of yourself. I mean, that's just, I mean, mentally.
Yeah. Mentally and physically. Yeah.
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 Physically, I always did. I'm saying for me as a personal level, the mental side of things was my weakness. And it was just the intensity and pressure that I put on myself that it drained me physically. It is definitely a combination of it, but it's like the dwelling on the loser. It's even though I felt I was a good healer throughout my whole career, I didn't realize the little amount of damage it was doing to me as time went by. Like I didn't fully release it. And then there is something there to that, right? Like, oh, I lost today. It's no big deal, but it's still subconsciously dwelling, right? It sits there. And there's that, and you just feel that uncomfortableness.
Mm.
I think everybody can kind of relate to that. And maybe
Absolutely.
Some of you that don't, God bless you, but it's tough, you know? So I think that for me, it was like, let it go, dude, let it go.
Yeah. I was just going to say letting go because, you know, Stephen Goldstein has been a guest on this podcast twice. I don't know if you know Stephen Goldstein from the Alpha
yes,
Mind
I do.
Podcast. Yeah. I don't know if you've been on his podcast. I don't think
I
so.
Have, yeah.
You have. Oh, I must have missed that one because I've listened to almost all of his. So he talks a lot about letting go. And that's exactly the point you're raising. You know, just let go. But it's easier said than done, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, because it's impacting your everyday life. It's impacting you financially. It's impacting you in your personal life. All these things are intertwined, right?
Yeah.
And especially if you're not in a good place with your strategy or if you're not doing well, you know, it could overwhelm you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I've really, really enjoyed this part of the conversation. There's some great sound bites that we're going to take out of that. But I want to just move away from this a little bit and just talk a little bit more about the So the technical stuff, because I know that you certainly tweet quite a bit in the work that I've seen of yours. You do talk about anchored VWAP quite a lot, in terms of looking for levels. Now I'm just going to show it. I mean, this is Brian Shannon's book, The Anchored VWAP, the perfect combination of price, time, and volume, maximum trading gains with anchored VWAP. It's a great book. I mean, I'm busy reading it at the moment. It's not exactly bedtime reading. You know, but he's obviously built a name for himself in the industry about around anchored VWAP. But I wanted to just ask you about how you use it. It's in technical analysis circles, it's something reasonably new, but it seems like it's very, very well respected. So from your point of view, now, how do you apply anchored VWAP? What time frames do you use it on? You know, where do you put the anchor points, et cetera.
So the anchored VWAP, Brian actually is the one. I've known Brian for many years, and so he was the one who was talking to me a lot about it and mentioning to me, like, Anthony, look, this really works. I see it over and over again, you know. And so I started implementing it into my strategy, and it is, I think, one of the simplest, most effective tools that you can use to understand if buyers are winning or sellers are winning. I don't think it's going to make you a ton of money. I don't think any indicator really will. I think that ultimately what it will do is it will keep you out of a lot of bad trades, which I think in many cases is more important than putting you into a lot of good ones. And I also think that when you look at an anchored VWAP, it allows you to understand environment without being a master technician or somebody who's got a lot of experience. And so from that perspective, I think that anyone could come in and use it, and I think they could use it effectively and efficiently, right? And so the way that I use it is I look at regular trading hours for the open, and I look to see where the market builds on the day. And I look at a 3-minute opening range, just the first 3-minute bar. I look at it like a boxing match. You know, the first 3 minutes, it's a time frame I like to look at in terms of what happens immediately on the open that takes 3 minutes of time to determine a range. Right now, opening range technically should be in more in the seconds. If you're looking at opening range, a lot of people look at 30 seconds or even 15 seconds. And that's a totally different strategy and just an idea. When I say 3-minute opening range, I'm looking at it from the perspective of that opening bell, that fight, right? How many buyers, how many sellers came out? And then I do is I box that area out and an anchor VWAP to it. If the VWAP pushes above that high or below that low, that first 3 minutes of volume, that surge, if that VWAP gets above or below that opening high or low, it tells you that volume is building above those prices or below those prices. And so it could tell me if the day is building higher for a potential trend up, if it's building lower for a potential trend down, or if it's staying within that first 3 minutes and it's just two-way action for now, and really nobody's winning that battle, right? I like looking at order flow, cumulative delta. I like looking at those types of things. As well to see what's happening from there. But when it comes specifically to the VWAP, I'm looking to see if it's building above an area of time with time and price. And so to me, that's where it comes in, and it could be very effective for me because I won't sell a rally. I would never say I won't, but I am less inclined, or I will trade it smaller to sell a rally of a VWAP above any significant area, or vice versa of picking a bottom. If a VWAP's declining and it's below key prices and volume's going down, I am less inclined to buy a dip. So that's what it helps me with.
It's very interesting, and as I said, it's something I'm reading, and it's not something I've particularly applied in my own trading yet, but it's very interesting reading Brian Shannon's book, and so certainly something that I'll be looking to implement more going forward. So it's interesting to hear, you know, others who are applying it to their trading and seeing. And I like what you say, like it's not necessarily going to make you a ton of money, but no tool will. It's a tool.
Yeah.
It's how you use it, right? It's
Correct.
it's just a tool, one of many
And I love when
tools.
people, yeah, and I love when people say, oh, this doesn't work or that doesn't work. Well, it doesn't work for you, right? I mean, it depends on your style of trading or what you're looking at. You know, for me, the VWAP works, right? And it works because it puts me in the right mindset. It puts me in the right direction of the market. It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to be right and I'm going to make money. But it sure does help me with determining direction and position sizing.
Yeah, it just improves your probability of success, I guess.
Bingo.
That's what we're all trying to do in this game. It's a probabilities game at the end of the day. There's never 100% certainty with anything.
Exactly.
All right. Anthony, are you big into journaling with your work? Do you journal after the day's trading session's done, before the market opens? Are you into that in a big way?
I journaled for a long, long time. Do I journal anymore? No. I'm not trading enough these days to where I need to know a day-to-day journal. You know, I don't trade every single day.
Right.
And I'm definitely more picky about what I'm doing. And I'm at this phase of my career where it's about building on what I've done. And I feel like I'm constantly learning, and still that's not the case. It's not why I'm not journaling, but I'm at this phase where every morning I write a free morning note that anyone can go and read. And that's basically, I would say that's a form of journaling that I do now, is writing about what I'm seeing.
Yes.
And what I'm working on is really trying to format myself every day in a plan that I see for the day, and just get better and better at my preparation and better at my execution. And so that journaling comes through in the writing of my plan, not in writing of what the day did. A lot of that, I've built enough journaling to where subconsciously I'm aware of that. And then when I write it in my morning note, it's a reflection on what I've done, and it's projecting what I want to do. So I'm just journaling in a different way, I guess, is the best way to describe
it. Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. And yeah, in a similar way, I do something similar with my business. I also write a morning note, and it's quite, you've got to put your brain into gear, and that kind of sets you up. So I get what you're saying. It is a form of journaling, and it's quite cathartic as well.
Exactly.
All right. We're nearing the end of our time together, Anthony, but I want to just ask you quickly before we do wrap up, any advice for new traders? Yeah, there's so many youngsters coming into this game. There's these funding firms offering people the opportunity to get involved and fund that. You know, it's really become so much more accessible to people than it was when you and I were starting out our careers, I guess. But what advice would you give to a youngster now starting in this business, saying that, and obviously there's loads of advice you could give and we don't have that much time, but I mean, if you could give one crucial piece of advice to a youngster who wants to make a career out of trading, what would it be?
You have time. You have time. You may not think you have time. You may not feel like you have time. Right now, the only thing you're focused on is results. The only thing you're thinking about is, what do I need to do to become consistent? What do I need to do to get myself out of this hole? What do I need to do today to make money? And your mind is so focused on the now that you can't see beyond what today is and look into the future. But the future gets there a lot quicker. Your goals get reached a lot quicker when you start to shift your mindset from focusing on the now and what you feel like you need to do. And when you stop focusing on day-to-day results and you start harnessing that energy and focusing on process. I talk about my morning note and why every day I'm working so much harder on my preparation. Because for you as a new trader, your preparation is going to be the key to your success. Because if you start coming in and get better at preparing and you get better at your process, you will get better at executing it, and you will become more patient. You will become more disciplined. And when you start to think long-term about process and start to think long-term about your vision of yourself as a trader, your short-term results will get better quicker. But most people don't want to do that. They only want to think about the now. They're so focused on it, but you have time. You have time.
What a great answer. You know, I ask a lot of guests that question. And that's brilliant. I mean, it just, you've got time, and it's so true. Yeah. Time is the greatest asset that you can have. When you're young, you've got lots of it.
Yeah, you do, buddy. And you don't believe it until so many years go by. And I look at myself now, I'm 46. I feel like yesterday I was 26.
Yeah.
Nothing, And if I would have thought this way back then, I would have made a lot more money. I would have made better decisions. Not that I'm unhappy with where I'm at. It has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
But the point is that I put myself through a lot more pain than I needed to because I couldn't slow things down. I was in a big rush. I wanted everything. And it just took a lot longer because I wanted everything so much quicker.
Yeah. It reminds me of that. I don't know if it's like a metaphor, but the farmer that goes out at night and tugs at his crops goes hungry. And it's kind of what you're saying, right? Just allow the time to do its work. Don't force it.
That's right, man.
Fantastic. All right, Anthony, we're pretty much done in terms of time now. Last thing I want to ask you is just for the benefit of the listeners, how do they follow your work? You know, you've given us 40 minutes of your time to listen to you now. It's been amazing. I've really, really enjoyed this. But if a listener wants to check you out, check out your podcast or your channels, where do they go to get more of you?
Go to anthonycrudelli.com. That's where they can find everything. I'm on X mostly, at Anthony Crudelli. And, you know, I have a Discord that's free. I do a lot of trader development and I put my note in there and I'm continuing to build on that as a free place for traders to go and learn more about futures markets. But it all starts with anthonycrudelli.com.
Okay, amazing. Well, Anthony, that's it. Super. It's been such an honor and a privilege to chat to you. Thank you very, very much for giving me your time today. And I think the listeners are really lucky to be able to get this 40 minutes of wisdom that you've imparted with us today. And I'm hugely appreciative of your time. Thank you so much.
Garth, you're the man. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I really enjoyed today's conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Talking with Traders, brought to you by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a leader in the field of online trading involved in this series. Please follow us on Facebook and engage with us there. And a reminder to make sure you subscribe to this series by clicking on the subscribe button on your favorite podcast app. If you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd also appreciate if you'd leave a review on the app too. Till next time.